are listening to the Stillbirth Matters podcast, presented by the Star Legacy Foundation. Our guest for this episode is Dr. Joanne O'Leary, a national expert on parenting during pregnancy after the loss of a baby. Dr. O'Leary does research and writing on prenatal parenting and the impact of loss on fathers and siblings, including adults who were the child in their family born after the loss of a baby. Well, Dr. O'Leary, thank you so much for joining us today on the podcast.
Oh, thanks for asking me. It's exciting.
The first question I have for you is how you got involved in this topic, parenting in a pregnancy after a loss of a child. Can you tell us what drew you to that line of work?
Actually, it was sort of by accident. My first degree is early childhood special education, so I had been in a birth to five program and moved to a hospital setting. And a mother called and wanted to join a birthing class that I had set up for families who'd had a special needs child first and were pregnant again. And my colleague, nurse Linda Parker, said, well, not until 30 weeks can you join because it's a class to get ready for birth. And the woman just got hysterical over the phone and said, you know, I'm only 12 weeks pregnant. I went to the infant loss group. But there's nothing for me now when I need you the most. So Linda and I started the first group 30-some years ago, and we had no idea what we were going to find when we got there. And other than working in special education, where, of course, people have unexpected outcomes, I hadn't worked with families that had had a loss. And five moms showed up. I can see their faces, know their babies, and when they left, got ready to leave, Linda said, well, we'll see you again in 2 weeks. And they're like, 2 weeks? We have to come back. We can't. 2 weeks is too long. So we said, okay, we'll meet you every week. And when they left, Linda, being the nurse, clinical nurse specialist, said, did you see all those moms with high-risk pregnancies? Because she heard one had preterm labor, another one had a baby with problems, another one had HELLP syndrome. So with her background, she was looking at the medical issues. And I looked at Linda, and said, but did you see all those babies with attachment problems? Because from my early childhood infant mental health background, I thought, oh my God, the little babies are in there, and they're like, mommy, mommy, I'm here. Because the parents were so scared to attach. So that's how we started the program. And over the years, on a weekly basis, for 16 years, we went a weekly group. We learned what these families need, and they just taught us a lot. And we know lots of babies because of it.
So you kind of got into this because it seemed like there was a need. There was a large group of families and parents who weren't getting what they needed, and you could kind of fill that void. Is that kind of how this happened?
Yeah, I would think so. I mean, even in special education, when you have a special needs child, you have to help figure out with the parent what that child needs. And it was sort of the same thing, only figuring it out prenatally. The other thing that kind of went with it was Claire Thorwick, who also did groups with me, was the antenatal testing nurse. And when I would watch her do a biophysical profile where she'd be looking at the baby's development in utero, I said to her, I think you do prenatally what I do postpartum when I do a newborn assessment. And that's how we started looking more and more at babies on ultrasound and talking to the parents while they were getting a biophysical profile and watching what the baby was doing and integrating, just helping the mom know, look how your baby knows your voice and look how the baby's responding. So yeah, it was our combination of early childhood and the medical arena.
You spent the majority of your career working with families who are pregnant after a previous pregnancy loss or infant death. Tell us about why these pregnancies are so different.
Well, first of all, now they know babies can die. So they've lost all their naivety and their ability to trust that this baby's going to live is huge. Why would they attach to this baby when everybody's telling them, oh, good, you're pregnant again, you're going to finish grieving, you're going to, forget about that baby, you're finally going to be happy. And they don't understand that the pregnancy is just a reminder of the other baby and that this baby could die too. So they're very, very different. And it's very, very hard to want to attach, because if I attach to this baby, does that mean I'm being disloyal to the other baby? So it's very conflicting.
What do you tell parents who might not want to attach or might be very, very hesitant to attach?
Well, I kind of learned that from Claire. Will it hurt less if you don't attach and that baby dies too? And because they're also so afraid, because parents know about this research on stress during pregnancy. So they're afraid, they're stressing the baby because they're not happy. I mean, that's huge. They aren't happy pregnant again. They desperately want that baby, but they are not happy because they just want to get to the other end. So it helps to say that the baby already knows your feelings. Like in group, we'll just say, if we're trying to get someone to journal to the baby coming, they'll say, I can't journal. I don't want this baby to know what I'm thinking, because what they're thinking is they still want the other baby. But that's normal for anybody having a second child. You always think you'll love that first child more until you see the second one. And we just say it's okay because the baby already hears and the baby's in group with us, so the baby already knows the story.
What are the most common struggles of parents in a pregnancy after a loss?
I think their fear and anxiety and the lack of understanding from families and friends that they still need to talk about their deceased baby and that they need support with this baby coming, and finding a care provider that will understand what's going on. And just this week in the group, one of the moms was talking about her physician, who was just being so wonderful, but she also shared that he and his wife had an 18-week loss. So it's like, yeah, this doctor gets it, understands why she is so anxious. And she's so much more comfortable because she has a doctor that she knows she can go to for any time.
What advice would you have for friends and family members who want to be supportive during a pregnancy after a loss?
Still talk about the deceased baby. Ask how they're feeling about this baby, and talk about, you know, if they know if it's a boy or a girl, how they're feeling about, you know, you're having a girl and your baby boy died before. How are you feeling about that? Or just being there for them and listening to them and being present for them.
You mentioned something earlier I wanted to touch on again, and that is, it seems like from lost families that I know, when they have a subsequent pregnancy, let's say they schedule a C-section in that next pregnancy, they circle that date on the calendar, and all they want to do is get to that date. They want to fast forward time. What do you tell people who are so focused on getting to the finish line?
What do I tell them? To trust the baby, you know, to try and tune into the baby, because the baby is the only one that really knows what's going on in there. And I know sometimes, I just remember one perinatologist, this woman had a cesarean, and I said something about the cord had been around the neck. I said, that baby just knew it was safer. And he said, oh, Joanne, I don't think that really happens. But I'm like, no, I think babies do know. I've seen too many babies that give signals to parents that things aren't okay and they get help. So, but yeah, that's why support's so important.
If a family has children other than the baby who died, what could they expect their children to experience in a subsequent pregnancy?
Yeah, that's a really good question, because children will model their parents' behaviors, and children can be just as afraid. I mean, often they say, well, this baby died too, Mom. And so they need a lot of reassurance There's been a few families where the siblings are like, just, it's going to be okay, Mom. I just know it's going to be okay. And that's been interesting to me, too. But another mom that was in our pregnancy after loss group, her little girl asked her, her friend's mother was pregnant, too. And she said, why do they keep saying when their baby comes and we call our baby a maybe baby? And so she had to talk about, well, because it is, you know, because they'd had a loss and this little girl had been part of the loss too. They don't trust until the baby's in their arms.
When you're in these pregnancy after loss support groups, is there a number one stressor or concern or question that you get from mothers and fathers in these groups? Is there a common theme you've seen over the years?
I think the biggest one is trusting the baby and getting the care that they need from their healthcare provider and learning from the other group members, first of all, that their feelings are normal for what they've been through because families and friends don't understand it, and that how to advocate for their care provider if they're not getting what they need.
Let's talk about that for a second. You say if they're not getting what they need. And I think we need to talk about what people need from their healthcare provider in that subsequent pregnancy.
A physician that will listen, that will ask more questions. I mean, I can think about some of the people that have come into the infant loss group who called but were dismissed. And I learned that working in special education. When a mother would call and say, I want you to come out and do a developmental assessment on my child, even if I screened over the phone that there probably was nothing there, I would always go because there was always something else that that mom needed that she didn't know how to ask over the phone about. So just ask more questions. You know, when a mom calls in really anxious, and they'll say, well, is this your first baby? And, you know, you probably don't know anything about movement. Ask more questions. This David Cheek, who is he has since retired, but he was a OB doctor in pre and perinatal psychology and health, which is an organization I'm involved in. He used to be able to prevent preterm labor over the phone, which sounds really bizarre. But his technique was he would ask them where they are, what they were doing, and say, tell me about your last 24 hours. And there was always something that had caused stress that had put the mom into preterm labor. And it's just been very interesting to me to have people ask more questions. Don't just dismiss them. And at one parent that I worked with that was very aggressive that I share sometimes in group is when she would call and want to talk to the doctor and she would be triaged by somebody at the phone and she would finally say, look, I've had three losses. Do you want to be responsible for my fourth or are you going to let me talk to the doctor? And I thought, you know what? She just said, I deserve to have somebody talk to me. And so and they need clinics that will respond to that. So, because another mom in our group, she got hysterical crying at her appointment because they weren't going to do a test that she thought she had another urinary tract infection. And only because she insisted on it did they do it. And lo and behold, the next day, the nurse called her and said, gosh, you were right. Your intuition was right. And here's a medication you need to be on. But people shouldn't have to get hysterical.
We've talked about the sunshine babies, which are the older siblings of a baby who was lost. Let's talk about the rainbow babies, the ones that were born after a loss.
First of all, I don't like that term rainbow babies, but unfortunately, it's just out there. So, and partly because we've had people in our group that have had another loss, so I hate it when they call it, you know, my rainbow pregnancy. And sometimes I think that can be a burden on a baby to, on a child to think, you know, I was the rainbow baby. And really, my passion is even more so in the intervention that we've developed because of the adults that I've interviewed who were the child and their family born after loss. And that started from doing workshops, and Linda Parker and I doing workshops together, and we would show the video that we developed, and these people would come up like almost, I can't describe their body language, almost in shock and say, I was that child, and I saw my parents on your video, and that's when I realized, oh my God, I was that child born after a loss. So I started researching these adults and found some very interesting information about how a lot of them, five different women, talked about feeling invisible in their family. They knew they were loved, but they felt invisible. And that some thought they weren't good enough. All of them are overachievers. It's like they feel like they need to make up for this baby that died before them. And I think that's one of the challenges in helping parents parent after a loss, is letting the sibling know there was a sibling before them, but making sure that they are just as important to them as the child that died before them, and keeping the child in the family, but as a member of the family, just as important as everybody else.
In the research you did on rainbow babies as adults, was it a factor on whether or not the family talked about the loss a lot versus did not talk about it at all, or did that not matter?
That's a good question, too. A lot, I have to think back on a lot of, probably half of the adults, and I've probably interviewed 30 so far, didn't know they had this sibling. So that was interesting. But the other ones did know about the sibling and were knew they were part of the family and were integrated into the family. So people were either very much loved and know they were treasured, or held at a distance out of fear of love, you know, fear of something happening to them. So
it sounds like parenting after a pregnancy loss or infant death has its own issues as well. Have you seen families deal with the stresses of parenting in addition to grief?
One of the parents that I worked with years ago just recently said to me, it's chronic grief. You never get over it. So that doesn't mean she needs therapy. It's just that it's chronic. And part of that is your parenting now is parenting this child alongside your grief, because you're always missing that baby. So I think the hardest thing is trusting that this baby's going to stay alive and this child's going to stay alive. And one of the adults that I interviewed said, I felt like it was my job to stay alive. And that's kind of a big burden to put on someone. So to get a balance between knowing things are okay and letting the child go out into the world too. That's hard. It's hard for any parent. But finding that balance is really good. And one mom gave a really good thing. She said, I watch other parents who haven't had a loss to see how they're raising their children and try to model after that, parents that she really likes. And I thought, that's a really good thing to think about.
Have you learned any best practices or any ways, things that parents who have experienced a loss, things that they can do to make sure that their living children feel loved and feel like they matter and that they're not living up to the baby that they lost?
Yeah, you know, the other thing that my research with these adults has been, and parents raising children, is the gifts they have because they were born after a loss. And I believe their sensitivity and caring for other people comes from being carried in a womb that was grieving. And parents worry, going back to, I don't want this baby to know what I'm thinking, because they feel grief in utero, they're not afraid of it. They're not afraid to approach people that might be hurting. And parents will tell me, oh, they're so sensitive and caring, and I'll say, can the teacher give you an example? And they do. They're the first people that go out to find someone that might be hurting on the playground. They're the ones that reach out to the special needs children that are integrated into their classrooms. And most of the adults, and I will say I have a skewed population of adults that find out about me and want to be interviewed, are in helping professions.
We're heading into the holiday season, and this can be a really touchy and sensitive time of year for lost families. What advice do you give to parents who are grieving, whether they are expecting again or not, during the holidays?
Stay away from family if they don't understand, and just say, I'm not ready to celebrate, and please respect that. If they know someone well in the family who has been supported to them, ask them to be the person at the dinner table to bring up the baby's name. One woman just this week in group said that they light a candle for every gathering for her son that's missing. And to ask parents, one family that I worked with, don't, in their Christmas letter, asked every year, you know, Jacob would be 10, please remember him this year by donating a toy for a 10-year-old for Toys for Tots. So things like that are really, really important.
Before we wrap up, why don't you just share a little bit about your involvement with the Star Legacy Foundation?
Well, I do the groups, the Pregnancy After Loss group, and we just started a grandparent group, which is once a month, that has really been interesting too. And I do presentations and talk about Star Legacy, and I'm teaching an online course, and part of the course is the students go in and look at the videos of some of the parents. They have to look at two videos of parents that are on the site and do a follow-up of what did they hear about the continued bond attachment for the deceased baby.
You've been working in this space for a while now, and you hear people, lost families who experienced loss maybe a decade or two ago, talk about it, and then they say, but that was a different time back then. And I'm curious, because you have been working in this space throughout that time, what changes have you seen? Is there any optimism that you can find, or any things we should be concerned about in terms of the progress we're making as a society as it pertains to loss?
Yeah, I wish I could tell you there's been a lot of progress. The progress has been in the research area. You know, people are finally researching it. More people are out there. We published our first chapter in 1997. So, Claire and I, we've been doing this a long time. What's sad to me is it's the same stories coming in. Somebody that has called for help and were dismissed by the care provider. And but there's hope, because there's research now. They want evidence-based research, which is now out there from the tasks that we established in 1997 from doing our groups. It isn't any different. The difference is that people are able to talk about it, because I've also interviewed elderly parents. And the thing that's striking to me is we didn't really talk about one of the things to help parents in the subsequent pregnancy is getting massage, yoga, body work. Because it's embodied grief, and there needs to be some kind of release. And I find this in the elderly parents too, that it's like it happened yesterday, and they love being able to talk about it. I mean, I had an elderly woman come to group when we were doing it at the library, and the librarian came in, was looking for the group, and I came out, and she said, I'm looking for a grief group. And she said, I read in the paper, for anybody who's lost a baby, regardless of how long ago it was. And it was 50 years ago. Hmm. And she came into the group, and it was phenomenal for the parents that were there, too. So it's the same phenomena. Even for different cultures, even if their culture says, forget the baby, get on with your life, these moms are still grieving. And now the research on fetal cell stain in women's bodies really helps support that, yeah, your grief is there. It's part, your baby's still with you, and let's do some work to help release so much of the pain.
Well, Dr. O'Leary, thank you so much for taking the time to be on the podcast. I really appreciate it.
Well, thank you for asking.
That's all for this episode of the Stillbirth Matters podcast, presented by the Star Legacy Foundation. Learn more at starlegacyfoundation.com. I'm Chris Duffy. Thanks for listening.